Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It will go down as the week that recession talk first thundered in full force, and it came in a swirl of news of wars abroad and presidential campaigns at home. Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke said he was poised to stop the economic bleeding as Wall Street swooned.
We stand ready to take substantive additional action as needed to support growth and to provide adequate insurance against downside risks.
On the campaign trail, jobs and economic security moved center stage. Mitt Romney promised just about everything.
We're going to have people in Washington who are optimistic about the future, who will fight for every industry, fight for every job, make sure that we do our very best to have a level playing field around the world. And I'm going to battle to make sure that America has that kind of strength.
And Defense Secretary Robert Gates said the Pentagon will send 3,200 Marines to bolster U.S. forces in Afghanistan and get the job done right.
The United States has had to basically relearn counterinsurgency, and as a government, including the civil side, we still have some deficiencies on that.
We've got a great crew with us today to unravel this week's news and size up the presidential campaign as voters prepare to stand up tomorrow in South Carolina and Nevada. With me in the studio, David Gergen, director of the Center for Public Leadership at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. He's author of Eyewitness to Power, The Essence of Leadership from Nixon to Clinton. He served as an advisor to Presidents Nixon, Ford, Reagan, and Clinton. David Gergen, welcome again to On Point.
Thank you.
And with us in the studio, Ellen Goodman, celebrated Pulitzer Prize-winning syndicated columnist for the Boston Globe. Ellen, it's always great to have you. Thanks for being here. And from Hanover, New Hampshire, On Point news analyst Jack Beatty, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly, is here. Welcome, Jack.
Hello, Tom, David, and Ellen.
Hello.
Hello, everyone. David Gergen, now the economy's center stage. Does it help the Republicans or the Democrats?
I think it helps individuals within the races. It probably helps Hillary Clinton and the Democratic side. Her husband is remembered. Whatever else you think about his presidency, those were good economic years, and especially for lower-income Americans when their jobs increased. And we saw in the late or mid-1990s, for the first time in 30 years, a serious increase in incomes for the bottom quartile. So I think it helps her, and I think on the Republican side, it clearly helped Mitt Romney in this a few days ago. Overall, in the fall, anytime an incumbent president has a recession, it helps the other party. It helps the Democrats.
But Mike Huckabee, of course, looking to make a big showing in South Carolina if he can, saying this week he was the first candidate, on the Republican side anyway, to recognize America's economic difficulties, and he's been touting that.
When they all said it was doing great, I said, you better keep your eye on it, because if you just not spend your time talking to people, but if you spend some time listening to people, you're going to find out that there's a world of hurt out there in America.
A world of hurt out there, says Mike Huckabee, the populist, economic populist in the GOP side. On NPR yesterday, Senator Barack Obama was asked why his stimulus plan, and everybody seems to have one suddenly, to jumpstart the economy would be better than Hillary's.
Well, Senator Clinton, I think, relies on government spending more. My plan relies more on tax cuts, tax rebate to every American, but also to a supplement for seniors so that we're getting cash into their hands right away. I think speed is of the essence if you want a stimulus plan.
Speed of the essence, but Mitt Romney in South Carolina yesterday took a shot at the Democrats, and especially Obama.
They say they're the candidates of change. And as a matter of fact, Barack Obama had a big sign behind him the other day. I saw he was speaking somewhere. Huge sign. The whole wall said change. And someone joked to me, he said, that's what you're going to have left in your pocket if he's president.
Ellen Goodman, Mitt Romney did well in Michigan.
He did.
When McCain said some jobs are never coming back, and he said they'll all come back and I'll bring them no matter what it takes, it worked there.
It did, just like the little Rambler worked for a while.
You know? Or his father. Head
or
of
his father. Yeah, I was a reporter in Detroit back when his father was governor of the state, and I've been fascinated watching because his father, if you remember George Romney's campaign in 88, you could make the case that Romney was the first victim of character assassination when he came up in 88 and said that he'd been brainwashed over the Vietnam War and then everybody jumped on him, and that was really...
68.
I'm sorry, 68.
How the decades fly.
Ah, yes. 20 years more or less. What the heck?
And that hurt him badly.
He was killed by that. And then you fast forward to Mitt Romney, who is, if anything, guilty of character suicide. He'll say anything anywhere.
David Gergen, Fred Thompson stood up this week, slow Fred, but talking with a certain kind of authority back on something more like home turf in South Carolina, very critical of Mitt Romney. He said he was up there in Michigan. This is Fred Thompson's word, promising, in effect, that the federal government going to come in there and bail the entire state out, sort of promising everything, Thompson's saying. He says, that's no way to get elected president on things you could not and should not deliver. Let's listen to Fred Thompson going after Romney here a bit in South Carolina.
Having hard economic times in Michigan right now. And he basically, as I could pick up on, you know, promised that the federal government was going to come in and bail out Michigan when he got elected president. Very conservative notion, don't you think?
Well, David, how about it? There's Romney, former CEO, bailout specialist, turnaround specialist. He's laid off and built companies both.
Well, we now have George W. Bush, who's also come out to help the economy and help bail people out. Mm-hmm. And so I think a lot of Republicans are going to be catching that fever here. But I think what's dismaying, what's disquieting about the Michigan vote, and Ellen really suggested this, is that Mitt Romney really did pander to the Michigan voters. And John McCain went in with straight talk, said those jobs aren't coming back in the automobile industry. We've got to move on and create other kinds of jobs, training and the like. And Mitt Romney said, I'm bringing them back. And he got the vote. And what's disquieting about it is the voters clearly bought the candidate who wasn't telling him straight talk, who was sugarcoating it. And our problem as a country is going to be we face massive issues just like this in the years ahead.
All marching out this week.
And if the message out of Michigan is pander to us and you can win, that's going to be very, very, I think, troublesome for the overall campaign from now until November.
Jack Beatty, Little Miss Sunshine, winning in Michigan this week. What do you see unfolding here in these big races?
Well, you know, to me, the disturbing thing in the Michigan results is the resistance of regular Republicans to John McCain. You know, he's the most substantial public man in the race in either party. He's the only Republican who could run a credible race in November, I believe, and yet this resistance to him continues among Republican rank and file. You consider the alternative. I mean, Mike Huckabee increasingly is a fringe candidate. If you factor out if you look how he did with non-evangelicals, 14% in Iowa and down to 8% in New Hampshire, less than Ron Paul, and yet he's been getting this pay-in to his populism and to his breakthrough candidacy by columnists like Frank Rich and David Brooks, when really he is, and in South Carolina now, he's made himself even more sectarian. He's come out with, he likened the other day, homosexual marriage to bestiality. He wants to square the Constitution with God's will. To nominate him would be to set off a migration, a flight of natural fiber Republicans out of that party into the Democrats that could create a new coalition. And then with Romney, you know, if you look at the polls, he is minus 12, his favorable rating among the general electorate, minus 12 favorable rating, and because they see him for what he is, you know, a phony, a guy who'll say anything to anybody.
Michigan put him in first place, Jack, of the heap.
And the fact is, the press would eviscerate him. The Democrats wouldn't have to do a thing. Yesterday, he got into a back and forth with an Associated Press reporter who practically called him a liar, or did call him a liar. And he said, oh, no, you have lobbyists in your campaign? Oh, no, I don't have lobbyists. Of course, he's got lobbyists all around him. And this would just go on and on and on, and there'd be nothing left of the man. So, you know, you wonder, when will Republicans recognize that their peak with John McCain over his occasional maverickism, that they can't afford it if they want to run a real race, and also if they want to keep their down ballot people beneath them on the ballot, if they want to give them a fighting chance.
Jack, hold the thought. Ellen Goodman there. What do you say?
Well, I wanted to go back to what he said about Huckabee being a populist. And just because somebody doesn't believe in creationism doesn't mean they're a populist, because economically, he doesn't sound like much of a populist to me.
Well, he talks about middle-class woes, lower-class.
Yes, but go back and think back to what he said about the subprime mortgage scandal and when he talked about helping people out. What did he say? He said that we can't basically bail them out because that would create a, quote, moral hazard, which is an economic term But in his case, it was also a moralistic term.
Meaning so bail them out once and you're going to have to bail them out again and again.
And
they'll learn they don't have to be.
You're going to encourage their irresponsibility. So he was, in essence, pinpointing people who were, a lot of them were conned into these mortgages as morally deficient.
Not pinpointing bank presidents who this week are being bailed out right and left.
Yeah. I mean, the Countrywide leaves with, what, $100 million? The head of Countrywide leaves with $100 million in his back pocket and maybe a touch of humiliation, but you could handle that for $100 million.
Maybe.
But the other thing I just wanted to add on to what Jack said, which is the real difference between the Republicans and the Democrats is the Democrats are undecided because they like their candidates, and the Republicans are undecided because they don't like any of them. So that's really why the Republicans keep switching from one state and one front runner to
a winner
the next.
Here, a winner there. David Gergen, do you buy that formula?
Not entirely, no. I think it has certain elements of truth, but I don't think the Republicans don't like any of them. I think they're having a hard time. I think they are rummaging through the candidates, and they're sort of playing king of the mountain. But I think it's way too early to say Republicans are going to resist John McCain down to the last the last dog dies. I think there's a really good chance John McCain is going to score well in South Carolina. He's very competitive in Florida, and you look nationwide. He has now moved ahead of Rudy Giuliani, even in places like New Jersey, among Republicans. So my sense is...
Hold the thought, David. Okay, we're up against the clock here. David Gergen, Ellen Goodman, Jack Beatty, please stand by. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're looking at a week in the news, big politics, big trouble in the economy, clone beef on the way maybe, and more. Ellen Goodman is with us, Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist with the Boston Globe and syndicated nationally. David Gergen, advisor to four presidents, is here, and Jack Beatty as well. David Gergen, you were right in the middle of an observation on the Republican field.
My sense is.
Yes, sir.
As I was saying.
That
reminds me of a British newspaper strike. It went on about 8 or 10 weeks. The columnist's first day back said, as I was saying.
And a whole lot of Hollywood writers on that ellipsis.
Right, exactly. My sense is that on the Republican side, that Huckabee is going to start falling away here pretty quickly, that Rudy Giuliani is probably going to go down in Florida, and that this is going to come down to a McCain versus Romney race, and it's going to be that's my hunch right now. We'll see, have to see how it plays out.
Jack says Romney's got too big an unfavorability rating, and McCain, doesn't have the money, or Republicans don't want to eat the soup he's ladling.
Well, McCain, if he wins in South Carolina, obviously hopes that the money will start pouring back into his campaign because he desperately needs it for February 5th, the blowout day. Say this about Mitt Romney. The issue that's now coming to the fore is his sweet spot. Mm-hmm. This is his issue. As much as he pandered in Michigan, he also commands high respect in the business community right here in Boston, for example, with Bain and Bain Capital and places in the West with what he did with the Olympics. And he is among the Republicans. He was the first to see that this recession was serious, not something ought to be done about it. Whereas John McCain, to my surprise, when he announced his economic package this week, was all long term. It was nothing about he was going to basically resist a stimulus package coming out of the White House.
It's almost a second-tier issue for John McCain as it moves first tier for the country, Jack.
Yeah, that's right. And in fact, David, you could see his tongue isn't made for economic issues. He's
the old warrior.
And you could see that campaigning in Michigan. I watched an event he put on, and someone asked him, could you explain how we got into this subprime mess and what we should do about it? And he said, very candidly, he said, you know, as a senator, I can't pay attention to everything. And I know my limitations. And so I have with me Carly Fiorina, the defenestrated Hewlett-Packard executive, and she'll explain it. And she came out, and for 10 minutes, she gave a lucid explanation for the whole thing. And he said, yeah, and my further solution to all this would be to appoint Alan Greenspan, whether he's alive or dead, to lead a commission to straighten out all this. Of course, Alan Greenspan, you could very well argue, got us into this mess one, encouraging the bubble, and by two, discouraging regulation.
It's a big one to hand off right there.
It was so clear that McCain was just not into the economic issue.
Ellen, Jack, David, we have a lot of listeners who want in here on this economic issue, in particular from Buckridge, Georgia. Rick is calling. Rick, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling to kind of speak for the middle class people in my community.
Please do.
And in our opinion, basically, is we're going to have to spend our way out of the economic problem that we've got.
What do you mean?
Well, the economy for the middle class, we're broke. And in order, I mean, the government's talking about sending us a check to stimulate the economy to get things moving.
Maybe $800 or something.
But sending me pocket change is not going to solve the problems that we face. Gasoline is at a all-time high. Food costs are skyrocketing. County governments are talking about raising taxes to cover their increased cost, and the middle class is broke. And
which party are you looking to, Rick? Which way are you looking? Democrat, Republican, who, what?
No, I'm not a Democrat. Democrats are pro-homosexual, anti-gun, pro-welfare, things that I just don't stand for.
So what would you have? What do you want the government to do?
I'm a grassroots citizen, and I think the middle class, the government has turned their back on the middle class, and my reasoning is they're trying to break our back so they can reduce our pay so that we can be on a lower pay scale so industry will come back into this country and be more competitive.
But Rick, let me ask you, the they you're talking about there, Rick, has been a Republican-led government for many years now. Does that give you any pause about the GOP side of the lineup?
No, I'm not happy with the GOP either. Not at all. I commend George Bush on protecting our country from terrorism, but other than that, I think George Bush has done a pretty poor job of taking care of the economy.
And what about in the lineup of potential successors? Who would you look to today if you were voting on the GOP side then?
I would vote for Duncan Hunter. I think people should take a hard look at him, but nobody seems interested in the man who really is a true American, in my opinion, another Reagan.
No, he's going fast and maybe practically gone. Rick, thank you very much for that call. Let's get one more from Middletown, Connecticut. Michael, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Good. What do you know?
I am a retail salesman in a carpet and rug store, and I can tell you that the recession began the day after Labor Day for us, and our fall selling season was about as busy as the Egyptian wing to the Museum of Fine Arts.
Mummies under the mummies.
So I'm glad that people are talking about recession because we've been living in it for, 3 months, and you know, I need a new refrigerator. I'm absolutely not spending $1,000 for the refrigerator I need because I'm not making enough money. If the government gives me $800, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to put it in the bank and leave it there. If they give me $1,600 because I'm married, maybe I will spend half of it, but maybe I won't either. So
maybe a new fridge, not too big a one. Which party do you look to for a solution, Michael?
I'm a dyed-in-the-wool Democrat. My mom brought me into the election booth when I was like 1 year old and had me pull Jack Kennedy's lever. To be quite truthful, I was all set to vote for Mrs. Clinton. And after the New Hampshire debates, I had to really reconsider.
Is Obama your new JFK, sir?
I have not made up my mind, and I am like as Winston Churchill said, the scariest part about a democracy is spending 10 minutes with the average voter. So, I am him.
And the enemy is us. Michael, thank you very much. Ellen, you're hearing here from Georgia and from Connecticut. Recession already with us.
Well, our caller from Georgia, I think, represents two legs of the three-legged Republican stool. There are social conservatives, there are economic conservatives, and there are security Republicans is probably a better word for that, which I'll leave to David. But, he is, by all economic interests or description of his own problems, a Democratic voter, but he's a social conservative and sounds like a hawk, and no way he's moving.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the Republicans are divided now. They've got, the candidate for social conservatives, the candidate for the mainstream Republican economics, and they've got the national security candidate, McCain. And they're sort of, depending on which day, which issue rises to the fore. And so things may depend whether there's another crisis in the world, whether the economic crisis gets worse or stays as bad as it is, or whether something pumps up the social conservative agenda.
David Gergen, what about that Reagan coalition and the new pressure it comes under with economic pressure? We've already been hearing for weeks, months now, that it may be breaking up. How do you see it?
I think it's been splintering for a long time. The elections of 2006 made that clear. And this primaries in which it's, you know, nobody can stay on top for more than 15 minutes, I think just underscores it. But I want to go back to this notion that listening to these callers, mm-hmm. there's clearly already a sense of real hardship out in the country that they graphically represent. And if we're coming into some really rough times, I think, and we're going to have a rough passage here. And the issue out of Michigan was, if we can't have straight talk through this, this is going to make it much, much tougher. For example, we've got to – if we're really going to deal with climate change, mm-hmm. which is pressing in upon us
and
very
fast. And John McCain was ready to stick with the higher mileage and stick
absolutely.
With caps
and
on the
here comes Mitt Romney and says you've got to get rid of those raising the standards on
roll
on
out the gas guzzlers.
Yeah, roll out the gas guzzlers. Keep this thing moving.
That
there's
worked real well the last 30
years. Well, there's
years.
A real clash between the environment and our economic concerns. There's going to be a clash over how we pay for health care reform. So we've got to have a candidate, a president, an administration that's going to really level with us about how tough this is and the kind of trade-offs we make, because I think we're coming into one of the toughest 5 to 7 years, 8 years that we faced in a long, long time with some of the toughest decisions any president's going to face. And we need somebody who can engage in straight talk and also mobilize the country on it.
I think the
social conservative time has passed too. Just as an example, what was it, the Saturday before the New Hampshire election, the New Hampshire primary.
Yes.
The law for civil unions in New Hampshire passed or went into effect. So the first
gay civil
couples,
union fund.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That is now more or less the default, almost conservative or mainstream position.
Not marriage,
not
but have a civil
word.
Union.
Did you hear mm-hmm. a word about gay marriage? In,
scarcely.
From any
I don't recall
of the
it.
Candidates, mm-hmm. Democrat or Republican in New Hampshire on the day that something close to gay marriage, you know, civil unions passed. Mm. I just don't feel it as that it's going to dominate the way it has.
But this question of who can call voters to grips with the challenges that mm-hmm. the country's clearly facing
and
right now.
And,
we
and
it
David mentions
callers.
The environmental question. Mm. And there was one of the environmental groups did a survey of all the questions that had been asked in all the gazillion debates so far. And out of 2,000 and something, there were only three about the environment. Mm. That doesn't represent the seriousness of the issue or the seriousness of the candidates.
Ellen, I want to ask you, on the Democratic side, your column this week says, I have a dream, and my dream is a Clinton-Obama ticket or an Obama-Clinton ticket. But in any case, Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama on the same ticket.
Right.
Is it only a dream, Ellen?
Well, I think it's possible. I mean, I came to this because voters kept saying it to me when I was out reporting it, and they'd say it kind of wistfully, gee, wouldn't it be? And I would say, not going to happen, you know, putting on my hardest yep. journalistic hat. And then I began to think, you know, what if, in fact, this is the year of change? And when Hillary Clinton said, you know, our parents would never have believed that an African-American and a woman would be competing with each other for president of the United States. And well, what our parents never would have believed, that an African-American and a woman would have been running for the top ticket.
But let's look
together.
At that with our hard hats on.
I
you really believe they would ever get on the same ticket? It's impossible
it
to imagine Hillary not at the top. And why, if you were Barack, why would you want to be number two?
Oh, it's still a pretty good gig being vice president.
Well, but you've kind of been a mausoleum for 8 years, young man, you know.
Maybe, maybe not. Yeah, I think it depends on this is a long shot, by the way.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm
floating this balloon and people have already come boom, boom, boom.
Boom.
But supposing you thought about not even the ticket so much as the a combination of people running the country. And supposing you thought of it as their strengths, not as demography, not as geography, not as identity, but their personal strengths. And Hillary Clinton has been running as the candidate of experience, which is fair. And Obama has been running as the candidate of inspiration, which is also fair. And what if the ideal balanced ticket isn't north-south, you know, but in fact, inspiration and experience. I mean, when Clinton and Gore, Clinton picked Gore, everybody thought, oh, that's probably not, you know, such a great choice. They're too much alike. But they were greater than the sum of their parts together.
Well, we'll try and imagine it, but to figure out who would put a number two around their neck is pretty hard to see. I'm Tom Ashbrook.
It is. I know.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. David Gergen, can you picture it? And let me ask you this. If they don't get together, and of course many people think they never would, does it, in fact, despite their making nice this week, do they end up, with all their strengths, tearing the Democratic Party apart? People lining up behind the woman, behind the minority candidate.
Well, 6 months ago, I think people thought it was unimaginable. Today, it is. I think Ellen is right. I hear the same thing from people, voters around the country, Democrats especially. Could we do this? But that also means that 6 months from now, when a choice actually has to be made, you know, a recession, a potential war, any of those things could make it the number one person do it. I'd go somewhere else and bring some other candidate to the fore. It's also true. I have a hard time envisioning Barack Obama. I don't think for a moment Hillary Clinton would accept number two. She would rather stay in the Senate and be the next Teddy Kennedy of her generation if she
had to.
And Barack Obama, I just can't see him doing that with her very easily. You know, there's an old saying about dog sleds, and that is, if you're not the lead dog, the scenery never changes.
That's worthy of Mike Huckabee.
I can't quite see it.
Let's listen to Barack Obama right here, speaking this week in Nevada, giving an implicit critique of Hillary Clinton's message that she has the most experience and can bring real change.
Lately, everybody's been talking about change. Now, that's okay. We want everybody on the change bandwagon. But, you know, you have to ask yourself, who can best deliver on change? I know that there's some in Washington who have seen these big crowds and they say, oh, this guy's inspirational and, you know, he's got all these great ideas and plans. But you know what? He's not ready yet, because we need to season and stew him a little bit more in Washington. We need to boil all the hope out of him.
Boil all the hope out of him. Linda, in Iowa City, Iowa, you're on the air, Linda. What do you think?
Well, I think it's a myth that he's actually a new breed of politician, and I think that for two reasons. One, if you look at his record in Chicago, the first primary that he ran in, he showed up with a team of lawyers and got everybody else on the ballot off the ballot, including his mentor. And second, in Las Vegas, his idea of a change candidate president was Ronald Reagan. And Ronald Reagan changed things all right, but for the worst.
So who are you lining up with then? Are you in the Hillary camp?
I am.
And why?
Because I think that her whole life story has been about helping people who need help. Children, the poor. She worked for Jimmy Carter for that legal group that helps poor people get legal counsel when they need it. She worked for the Children's Defense Fund. Her husband and she were involved in trying to get civil rights for gays, to get them in the military. People forget Don't Ask, Don't Tell was only his second choice.
So right down the line, she's got your punch list. Jack, you hear Linda in Iowa City. Does it sound like a winning message for Hillary Clinton as she checks off those boxes?
Well, you know, in last week's debate, Tim Russert raised the issue of social desirability effects in polling, and he put it to Obama. He said, you know, the polls in New Hampshire showed you higher than what you got. Do you think that was owing to the social desirability effect, that people were saying, yeah, I'm for a black president, but then when they really voted, they weren't? I'll get to the Hillary part of this in a moment.
Okay, hold. We'll hold again. Ellipses. Hold the Hillary thought. Jack Beatty, Ellen Goodman, David Gergen, please stand by. We're looking at a week in the news, a week that saw its share of bad decisions and curious decisions and some big goodbyes. Olympic sprinter Marion Jones going to jail for lying about steroid use, and more, told Oprah that losing her medals wasn't the worst thing.
They fail in comparison to seeing my husband cry I mean, they fail in comparison to seeing my my mother, you know, have to stand there in the courtroom and bawl.
The FDA okayed cloned meat and more for supermarket shelves. Not every consumer was ready for it.
I don't feel like it's correct. I wouldn't want to buy meat if I knew it was through cloning. You don't know what the long-term effects can be of that whole process.
American chess master Bobby Fischer, Icelandic citizen at his death at 64.
Then I started playing games with myself. I would make the white moves and the black moves, and then I would just play through the whole game, and eventually I would checkmate the other guy. I almost always won.
Bobby Fischer, gone, and the blockbuster musical Rent will close after 12 years on Broadway.
I can't believe this is goodbye.
Jack Beatty, after the longest ellipsis in history, you were saying about Hillary's what likability factors?
Sort of. I mean, there's a piece of research people should look at in the Public Opinion Quarterly for last fall, done by a team of researchers into this issue of social desirability effects and support for a female American president. In other words, are people overstating their support? They looked at the Gallup poll from 2004 that found that while 86% said they would vote for a qualified woman for president, 34% said most of my neighbors would not. And so they wondered, well, wait a minute, maybe there is a social desirability effect in these polls, and that maybe if you devised a protocol that could allow, you know, weed out that, mitigate that social desirability effect, what would you find? Well, they did do such a protocol, elaborate testing, and they found that 26 to 29% of Americans are, quote, angry or upset at the idea of a female president.
Kind of Bradley effect for the gals there.
Yes, and, you know, that some of this, they say, may be a Hillary effect. They did this before she was the candidate. But if it is a Hillary effect, it may be even larger because of Hillary's specific resistance. Now, this really makes me think that nominating Hillary Clinton would be flying in the face of this kind of real voter seeming resistance, and by the way, resistance in every demographic category, male, female, college, no college. The highest resistance was among people earning $100,000 or more a year.
Ellen Goodman, you've carried the women's movement flag and a big broader sort of whack of it than that for a long time. How do you look at the race issue? Got an airing last week, for better or for worse. Is there a gender stumbling block at the end of this road or not?
Two things. One, I wanted to ask Jack before I answer that, which is a good question, whether that 22 to 26%, if I'm right, are people who would never vote for a Democrat anyway, whether they are conservatives, in which case
Baking
it doesn't really matter. You know,
mm-hmm.
Their vote, it doesn't mm-hmm. really matter as an effect on Hillary. So maybe I should ask him if he knows
that.
Do you know that, Jack?
They say that some could be non-voters, but it was a random
non-democratic
voters. Yeah, they didn't allow for that in particular. But since they're
demographic, that's the crucial question, really.
Yeah, but I would wonder if you have a random sample, are you going to get such a skewed Republican result? I don't know.
You have to look into the Democratic Party to figure it out.
But I mean, it's interesting to see what's happened in this campaign in terms of, you know, when Hillary announced last year, the cover stories were all, is America ready for a woman?
Mm-hmm.
And the tenor of the campaign, I mean, the deliberate structure of Hillary's campaign was to present her as a commander-in-chief, as a leader, mm-hmm. in a sense to degender the campaign. And they were, be careful what you wish for. They were extremely successful at that.
Mm-hmm. Until the misty moment.
She was the one who had the experience, and she checked in the twice as much experience as the next guy box,
say, yep.
You know. She filled in all of those boxes that women theoretically have to check off before they can get to be CEO of anything.
Mm-hmm.
And she did come across as the commander-in-chief, the tough guy in the race. And then guess what? It turned out that change was what was more attractive than experience to many of the voters. And in the process of becoming the tough guy and the experienced one, she had lost her change crits. people had forgotten how new it would be to have a woman in the White House, and she was attacked as old politics. I mean, Edwards called her, you know, the status quo, and Obama called her same old, same old. And I think what happened in New Hampshire in the course of the, quote, emotional moment and several other things is people remembered, oh, yeah, in and of itself, having a woman in that office is an extraordinary kind of change as well.
When the chips are down, Ellen, and they began to get down last week and things got tough and a little mean.
And when the chips are down, there is still this question out there. Traditionally, the notion is that to the degree to which you are strong, you are not seen as female.
But what about women in the Democratic Party? When the chips are down, are they going to let Hillary go on down the river, float on down, and go to Obama? When it really gets down to it, are women, if I may say so, are women like you going to, is there a chance they would not go with Hillary?
Well, there's, you know, women is a extremely large.
I tried to narrow it.
Can we?
Making them like you.
Can
I know
we?
You're one of a kind.
Like me, 5 feet eight. What shall we say? Clearly, Clinton's greatest female support among older women, she won the
huge
over 65
yep.
gap by 30 points. That's almost off the charts.
That's an age, but it's also a generation.
It's a generation,
it's a political view.
People who identified with the struggle that she mm-hmm. knew, which knew whence she cometh.
Yes.
And also she's gotten the largest part of her female support from working class and lower middle class women as well. Where she's had the toughest time is women in her own demographic, kind of college educated, often professional women, and a
now we're getting around to you,
college-educated professional women, a number of them are so busy seeing her as a woman and comparing her to other women and comparing her to what they've been through that there's a new book out by writers that says 37 Ways of Looking at Hillary. Well, I mean, yeah, that's just the beginning. She has been this great psychodrama.
150 million ways and maybe
those
more.
Those women, though, when it's Democrat versus Republican, those women who have, if she gets through the primary, who have all of these swirling feelings and a lot of ambivalence about her, are not women who are going to vote for, McCain, Huckabee.
But Obama's the question. We're looking at Nevada most immediately and beyond that. How do you look at this pairing? If it's a pairing, I mean, Edward's still riding along in the sidecar, but how do you look at it, David?
It's very, very close in both for Democrats in both Nevada and South Carolina. I think it's impossible to predict at this point. I'd be interested in what Jack thinks about this, but my sense is that the injection of race and gender into this campaign since Iowa has worked to hurt Obama and to help Hillary. On the racial
simply
side.
Simply by raising
them. Well, I think on the racial side that Barack Obama was striking many people as sort of a transcendent figure who sort of transcended race, and he's now increasingly seen as a black candidate rather than a man who happens to be black who was calling for a new kind of politics.
Is that a deliberate, schemed outcome?
I'm not
Bill Clinton,
sure
the political genius, supposed to be in the back room here.
I don't know whether it's deliberate. I wouldn't want to say that, but I think that's been the effect.
It's atmospheric. But by the way, let us remember that Obama is of a multiracial family.
Well, that's true.
And not,
When you get into American definitions about what's going
on. I understand
on the
that.
On the women's issue, I think Hillary Clinton's been very clever about this. She said race and gender, but we have a chance to break the black glass ceiling. But by the way, gender should not play a part of this conversation. I mean, she's having it both ways, and it's working. It worked extremely well for her in New Hampshire. I think when she was up before going into Iowa, there was a sense that she was arrogant. But once she went down, there was a sense people sympathized with her, especially that tearing up moment. It moved their hearts. And I think it's going to help her a great deal in the primaries to come. In the general, it's a much tougher struggle.
Here's a moment, in this last week, in a much publicized interview, airs today on the Tyra Banks Show. Hillary Clinton opening up under questioning a little bit about Bill Clinton's infidelity with Monica Lewinsky. We hear first from underwear model and TV personality Tyra Banks.
How did you persevere during the darkest moment in your life?
I really had to dig down deep and think hard about what was right for me, what was right for my family.
What was right for my family, people will be tuning in. Christina's calling from Nashville, Tennessee. Christina, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Very well. What do you see, Christina?
Oh, I just want to say, first, I love NPR. Thank you. It's a great show. I wanted to make a comment about Barack Obama. Everybody is saying he doesn't have the experience, and I really don't think that that's a big problem. I think to be a good president, you just have to have a good personality. I just trust him. I think he'll be a great president, and I don't care he doesn't have the experience. As Hillary Clinton, it will be great if we have a woman president, but I think she's just playing a good game, changing her strategy, and I just don't trust her, and I'm not going to vote for her.
So judging with the gut there, and many Americans will, and we hear it. Thank you very much, Christina. Let's get another call from Walpole, Massachusetts. BK, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to tell a brief encounter between God and creation. First he made man, everything was good, an angel was watching, and then he created woman, and suddenly the angel asked, what is that? There's a drop of water in your eyes. He said, that surprises me. I have no clue at all. So even God was taken for a ride with a teardrop. And the whole
BK, you're pretty cosmic. Where are you going?
Yeah, even the poor pundits got all wronged up because of this.
The misty moment in New Hampshire. Okay, but people watch, and personality matters, and emotional...
I think the teardrop is very universal. In India, any woman can get a vote just by crying. But I'm surprised. In this country, I mean, like, if a woman can buckle down or manipulate, either way it goes. I mean, there's only two choices. She buckled down because she was not doing well, or she's trying to manipulate the whole crowd. But this is not for a president's attire.
Well, a president needs a lot of tools, I guess, from tough stuff all the way to the empathetic.
Does the caller know that Romney cried three times in the last month?
George Bush says he cries. He makes no bones about it. BK, thanks for your call. Let's get one more from Cabot, Vermont. Paul, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm calling about the meat, cloned meat and milk.
The FDA is saying on Tuesday, effectively kind of lifting the moratorium on the sale of cloned meat and milk from cloned cows and all the rest. What do you think, Paul?
Well, a couple points. I can only assume that like cows treated with RBGH, there'll be no labeling required.
That's what I understand. That's right.
And also, eating certified organic is really the only guarantee you have that you're not eating, you know, growth hormones.
Are you an organic farmer up in Cabot, Vermont, dairy country?
Yes, I am, actually. My wife and I transitioned back in 95.
So do you see the green light for cloned meat and milk as a boost for you and your business, organic?
It's done wonders for us. Yep, certainly has.
Of course, the Agriculture Department saying that they hang on just a second here. So apparently it's not quite all thundering onto the supermarket shelves yet. Jack Beatty, do you expect to go out and pick look-alike steaks soon up there in Hanover, New Hampshire?
You know, I thought we already had that in Spam.
I thought that's what they served on airplanes.
I don't know. Science gets out in front of us, though. It all tastes the same, huh? It's cafeteria food.
Oh boy!
I don't know what to say except go organic. If that's the business you're in, I probably will be a little help there, and who knows where.
Well, I think most people would like to know, would like everything to be labeled.
Sure. Yeah, organic
make,
or not.
Make,
sure
make exactly their choices, or if it's sure. Or if it's cloned, whether or not cloned means it's more or less healthy. You want to know the origin of what you're eating. I mean, I think that's...
And I expect it to be a question in a debate soon, but one thing for sure, we don't have clones in this debate, in this campaign season. I mean, these are just not clones we're looking at up there on the stage. In both parties, the choices are right across the map. Exciting, good year for American politics.